Hello, 10th Mount Pleasant, and hello, 10th Online. It's great to be here. I come a couple times a year, so it's great to be here in the middle of the summer. So it is summertime, and you might be into watching the latest summer blockbuster movies. There's one particular movie franchise that has come out with 13 movies, a comic book series, all sorts of action figure characters, all revolving around the same character, and that is Batman. Any Batman favorites here? Actually, I saw a little guy wearing a Batman outfit. Yeah, that's right. Here's the dad. That was awesome. I was like, wow, Lord, thank you for that. Personally, I love the 1966 Keechy Adam West Batman. Anyone's fans of that one? More than maybe the newer ones. But I've been, perhaps I don't understand them as much, but I've been curious, why is it that Batman holds such a cultural resonance in our society? It's a type of storytelling that is very popular, a type of storytelling called the anti-hero. So you might be familiar with Batman's origin story. You know, the young boy, Clark Kent, was out for the movies, out in the city with his parents one night for movies, and some that's right. Making sure you're awake. We're not talking about Superman. Oh my goodness. I actually have to admit that Superman was more my favorite growing up. The big reveal. Yes, so Bruce Wayne out for a night at the movies with his parents when they were senselessly killed by some muggers, some robbers in the city, and leaving him as an orphan. And the story goes that the pain from growing up as an orphan led Bruce Wayne to become this adult who by day was sort of this well-heeled guy, with key to the city, fighting for justice. But then at night, he put on the Batman outfit and was fighting justice, walking that thin line between good and evil and violence as he tried to rid his city, Gotham City, of its evils. So as I dove into the theme of our Bible story today, I think I saw the Batman anti-hero theme in the character arc of David and Goliath. It's one of the oldest and most well-known stories all through our society, David and Goliath. And we aren't likely, perhaps, if you've grown up reading it in church, to class it as a Batman-like anti-hero theme story. But I think it actually deserves a deeper look because I think there are themes in there that the Bible wants us to see. So as Craig said, we're in this summer series, Bible Stories for Adults. Sometimes these stories that we read, we gloss over, they're full of themes. They're full of themes that are sometimes dark. They prompt a lot of questions if we're willing to look and ask and dig deeper. So we want to revisit some of this. And today we want to look at beyond a simplistic reading of the story and see what is there, what could we see under the surface if we really dig. Take about 10 minutes to read the whole story. So I actually wanted to assume that a lot of us know the story, and perhaps you've maybe heard about it in society, perhaps you've never read a Bible, but maybe you've heard or through like Malcolm Gladwell's book on the topic, a David and Goliath theme. Or if you are a frequent Bible reader like me, perhaps you've glossed over it. And perhaps you're more familiar with it in sort of children's stories, like in the VeggieTales classic, David and the Giant Pickle. Anyone seen that one? So you know the story. David is here he is. David is the younger brother, the youngest brother of a family. And he's tasked with taking lunch to the battle-hardened brothers on the front line fighting the dreaded Philistines. But when he arrives, he finds that the armies are squared off, but no one's fighting because the Philistines have this champion, this giant named Goliath, who's declared a 1v1 battle. Send out a champion, and if he wins, you win. But if I win, we win. And so the story goes that Saul and the army didn't have enough faith. And so then this young David shows up and says, put me in, coach. And he gets sent out only with the smallest little sling and a stone. And from a distance, he takes down the giant with one mighty throw. Easy, clean, right? Easy, clean victory. And don't get me wrong, there is a lot of value we get and we can glean from this sort of surface level, simplistic reading. For instance, Goliath is up there specifically mocking the name of Israel's God, Yahweh. And David's inclination is to take him out and to restore God's honor. Beautiful. As well, we learn that young David, with that sling, has developed many skills in sort of out in the wilderness in secret with God when he had to take down the bear and the lion to defend the sheep. And so he's confident that God can use his simple skills to take down an even bigger giant. So again, these are amazing themes. There's so much to learn. But what if, in the way the Bible writes the story, in the context of the Old Testament, there's more to learn, more sort of adult style themes? And so we can ask, what is there that we may have not seen in a first reading? What is there that might actually call us to action with a complicated story for a complicated world that we live in today? So I want to do two things as we look at this story in a fresh way. I want to actually look at David as a flawed hero, an anti-hero, and see that he still has a role to play. And then I want to look at how this battle actually prefigures what Jesus did on the cross and how it points to a role we have to play. So first, let's look at David. As I mentioned, I think he's presented as an anti-hero in the Bible. So what do I mean by anti-hero? First of all, what I don't mean is reference to Taylor Swift's song, Anti-Hero. Anyone have that going in their head? Great song. And the fact that she sings about it sort of shows how popular this theme is in books and movies. No, what I mean is what this author online said. I like this definition. He says this: unlike traditional heroes who typically embody virtues such as courage, selflessness, and unwavering morality, antiheroes are morally ambiguous and complicated. They are noteworthy because they possess traits and engage in actions that deviate from what we would do as viewers. So is David of the Bible an anti-hero? One author says it this way. He says, the truth is that there are two versions of David in the Bible, the David of history and the David of our faith. That is, the man as he was and the man we would prefer him to have been. And the man he was a killer, violent and vengeful. His enemies had a nasty habit of dying so that he could marry their wives and inherit their property. Think Bathsheba. So yes, David, if we read him honestly, is a morally complicated anti-hero in the Bible. So, and in a sense, like Batman, he fights against evil, but gets up mixed up in a lot of darkness along the way, walking that fine line between good and evil, light and darkness. So I actually want to look to see what is it in the story that shows us some of that. First of all, let's hold in our minds for this story and all these Bible stories that the intention of the writers is to give us a character study that, especially in the life of David, we can follow over the arc of his life, and we can look for the highlights and the pitfalls. After all, he was Israel's most famous king, the one from whom Jesus himself descended. We see hints of David's flawed character when he shows up to the front lines with food for the brothers. The story tells us that for 40 days, this champion Goliath had been coming out and mocking the name of God, mocking God's people, saying, send me a champion, and whoever wins will win this battle. So as we read the story, if you read it in 1 Samuel chapter 17, it says this as David shows up. It says, now the Israelites had been saying, do you see how this man keeps coming out? He comes out to defy Israel. The king will give great wealth to the man who kills him, and he will also give him his daughter in marriage and will exempt his family from taxes in Israel. David asked the men standing near him, what will be done for the man who kills the Philistine and removes this disgrace from Israel? Who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God? And they repeated to him what they had been saying and told him, this is what will be done for the man who kills him. So what's on offer here for David is no less than becoming a prince in the king's family, complete with a wife and complete with a financial deal of a lifetime for his family. Amazing. So David had heard what the king's offer was if he would fight the giant. But it seems like, the story goes on, it seems like David's interested to hear it again. He asks a couple times. And perhaps he's interested as well to be heard asking around the camp for this deal to be repeated. This next part is further revealing of perhaps David's motives. It says, when Eliab, David's oldest brother, heard him speaking with the men, he burned with anger at him and asked, why have you come down here? And with whom did you leave those few sheep in the wilderness? I know how conceited you are and how wicked your heart is. You came down only to watch the battle. Now what have I done? Said David. Can I even speak? Then he turned away to someone else and brought up the same matter. And the men answered him from as before. What David said was overheard and reported to Saul, and Saul sent for him. So I always read this part and says, you know, older brothers, right? Does anyone have an older brother? Older brothers. Can't let the younger brother come up and do anything. So that's how I had read it. However, some scholars indicate that the number of verses and the attention on this back and forth is a detail to perhaps reveal that the oldest brother knows something about David, the youngest brother, that we, the reader, should know about his character. Perhaps at home, David is a conceited guy, a bragger with a heart grasping for power even within the family. And this seems confirmed somewhat as the scriptures show David continues asking among the men to repeat the offer of the king. Like I said, canvassing the camp before pouncing on the offer. So again, as readers, we could ask, so what kind of hero will this new anointed king? He'd been anointed at this point as a teenager, not yet king, but anointed as a future king. Will he be a man after God's own heart? Or will he fall like the first King Saul did as a handsome man, but falling to the pitfalls of character disasters when he gains power? As an author I read sees this in the exchange between David and his brother and the men as a hint towards his political ambitions. This author writes, the anointed future king of Israel spends several verses trying to confirm this rumor. He wants the reward and the promises that such a reward would bring to his family and to himself. He's not merely a young man, innocent and bravely defending his people and his God. He is a young man with political ambition, hopes, thoughts, and the utmost confidence in his own ability to be joined to Saul's household. David's character. This next layer about David is when he then, because of that, gets to go in front of King Saul. David is so bold to stride into the king's tent and volunteer as tribute to fight the giant. During the battles of the day, it would have been odd, actually, for a king to appoint a champion. The king is supposed to go out. The king is supposed to fight the battles for the people. And in fact, it says Saul has slain his thousands. So he's been to battle. Why is he not fighting this one? So the story is actually a put down of King Saul and an elevation of King David. A bit of propaganda in the Bible. Again, you might not be comfortable with that. So some scholars say they can look here for seeds of what then happens in the rest of David's life. Again, as I said, bring to mind the Bathsheba incident. You may remember it. Many years after he is king, we see a scene where instead of going out in the springtime with the men for battle, he's up on a rooftop, standing there relaxing while his men are out fighting on the sidelines. And what does he see? He looks to a nearby rooftop where he sees a woman bathing, whom he then takes to bed with him, and then has her husband fighting on the front line, murdered in battle so that he could have her as a wife. So we think, is this the same man when he's anointed after God's own heart? Is this the same man that fights the giant and we're supposed to applaud? So I want to suggest today that the Bible stories that we read don't often give us a simplistic good and bad, good guys, bad guys version of who we're seeing. With the exception of Jesus, all the characters of the Bible, all of them, have flaws inherent in who they are because of the way sin has worked its way through creation. And yet, we get to see that despite flaws of a guy like David, despite our flaws, we get to see how God works, not with perfect people, but with flawed people. we get to reflect on our own character and ask, well, how would we act or react when all the chips are down? Perhaps you'll face a moral situation. Perhaps you'll be in an interpersonal conflict, or maybe you are right now. Perhaps you're faced with a secret choice where you know you could get away with something, but you suspect God would know and you would know. It's in those moments that we can ask, will we trust in God, or will we fall into compromise? Will we be faithful to God's call? Just this last week, I was at a camp for the newcomers. You've heard about the newcomer ministry in our church. And I had given a talk. I'd spoken about the fruit of the Spirit. Many of the people in attendance are from Muslim backgrounds, and yet some have become believers and some are curious. And after I spoke, this one woman stood up and said, could I share something? And so I just felt, no, this is a good opportunity. So I handed her the mic. And what she proceeded to do is, at great probably risk to herself, is share in front of her fellow Afghan people a story of how over 9 years, Jesus had shown up to her and Jesus had changed her life. It was a very moving testimony. One of the Afghan women left in tears, and I just stood there saying, wow, here's a woman growing in character because of what Christ has done in her life. When the chips are down, she rose to the occasion and she shared. So I want to suggest that by us considering these complicated themes of the hero or anti-hero in the Bible, we can see that there is room for all of us to join in God's work. So David, who we've seen is maybe a complicated guy, he's the same guy even after sinning with Bathsheba, even after committing murder. He's the same guy who wrote the Psalms, many of them, in particular Psalm 51, which I want to read just a small part of. So after that terrible crime, David says this, have mercy on me, God, according to your steadfast love, according to your abundant mercy, blot out my transgressions. Wash me thoroughly from my iniquity and cleanse me from my sin. For I know my transgressions and my sin is ever before me. Against you, you only have I sinned and done what is evil in your sight. So here, even after sinning badly, David displays a sober awareness of his sin. So no matter how we judge ourselves for what we've done, we can actually follow David's example. And perhaps this is actually what it means about David and about us when it says a man, a woman, after God's own heart, a person aware enough of their sin to bring it before God and to not back away, but then to take up our role and to engage in heroic action with God and with God's people. So like David, we can, who are complicated, can see ourselves and join in. There's a role for all of us. So that's our first point. I now actually want to turn to the actual battle and see that it is a picture of something that we may not have seen before. It's actually a picture of Jesus. In 1 Samuel, Goliath is described in very interesting ways. Three times, Goliath is called the champion. Now, that word in its original language literally means a man of the in-between. So if he wins, like I said, this 1v1 battle, his side wins. So the question hangs, if the Philistines have a champion, a man of the in-between, does God's people have a champion, a man of the in-between? So we might cheer along with the first readers when David steps into the king's tent and says this. David said to Saul, let no man's heart fail because of him. Your servant will go and fight with this Philistine. And David said, the Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and the paw of the bear will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine. And Saul said to David, go and the Lord be with you. So David here, this imperfect, flawed character, is offering to act as the champion, the man of the in-between, to represent Israel, to fight the impossible battle, to beat the giant, and to save a nation. So one man fighting on behalf of many to save many. Does that sound like a familiar story you may have heard in the Bible? Anyone want to shout out? Is that recognize? You recognize that? It's the life of Jesus, right? One man fights to save many. And yet, this same champion narrative in the Old Testament, it's not the first time it comes up. It's actually, I want to suggest, intended as an echo of the very first time this theme comes up in the Bible. In Genesis, on the opening pages of the scroll, this story that's meant to act as an intro to everything that comes later. The story, how you know, you might know, goes like this. God made an amazing world, and yet there was a deceiver who slipped in, a deceiver who led humanity astray in ways that has still affected all of us. And this Satan, this deceiver, depicted as a snake, lied to Adam and Eve, and they believed the lies instead of believing God, their creator. And then when the first man and woman are standing there naked and ashamed, maybe still holding the apple, God stands before them. And maybe the snake is slithering away. And God has these words that he says in the hearing of the first humans. And that's where we get it. It's in Genesis 3:15, where God says this to the snake. Because you've done this, cursed are you above all livestock and above all beasts of the field. On your belly you shall go, and dust you shall eat all the days of your life. I will put enmity between you, the snake, and the woman, between your offspring and her offspring. He shall bruise your head, and you shall bruise his heel. It's a prophecy that a member of humanity, in fact, will rise up someday and will finally crush this serpent's head. So you might be asking, Mike, how does this apply in any way to the David and Goliath story? I'm glad you asked. I want to suggest it's a picture. The David and Goliath story is an echo back to this story, this original story, where evil is predicted to be crushed. It's a common technique that the Old Testament writers used. And so scholars suggest that the way the David and Goliath story, the way that the giant is described, it provides us those echoes. So three brief things that they see that I sort of enjoyed reading and wanted to bring it to you. First, Goliath is presented in scale armor. It says that several times. So this scaly armor all over his body. Again, echoes of the snake theme that runs through the Old Testament. And then next, Goliath's head and this armor is bronze. You might think, okay, bronze. But in fact, like in many places in the Bible, this word bronze, scholars tell me that the same letters used for that word, nekosheth, bronze, is the same letters you used to write the word snake. So here we have a giant dressed in scales, dressed in bronze. And again, this word, this metal bronze is often seen and used to imply dubious or lusty or harlotry. So echoing Satan, the crafty snake. And finally, when David strikes that giant, scaly giant down, it says it like this. David put his hand in his bag, took out a stone, slung it, and struck the giant in the forehead. The stone sank into his head, and he fell on his face to the ground. So again, Goliath, the snake-like creature, falls with his face in the dust, just like God had predicted, that you'll crawl in your belly, your face in the dust, and your head shall be crushed. So again, this is this beautiful symbolism right in the heart of the Bible, pointing to head to that ultimate story where Christ will stand in the in-between for us. So in this battle story, the Christ story that we can point ahead to, Jesus used an unlikely weapon. He didn't use political tactics. He didn't use an army. But like David running out with a sling, he used the simple and even shameful way of fighting the giant evil, Satan. He went to the cross with his life, and he laid down his life in an unlikely manner, in a way that this small, weak weapon would kill death and Satan forever. So we've covered a lot of ground today in this old story. And as we read these extra layers, I want to ask, where do we see ourselves in it? And do we see ourselves, do we see a role for ourselves when we read this story? Because we can ask, what feels like a giant in our lives? Something big and scaly and ominous. Something that has us hiding on the sidelines, quivering in fear, wondering what will happen to us. Something that requires Jesus a champion, to stand as the man in the in-between and fight for us. Perhaps it's in your family. Maybe there's a brother or sister that's sort of locked horns and has this long-standing battle that seems impossible to break. Maybe there's a personal issue you face, a moral issue. You wake up with it day by day and it mocks you. You can't get rid of it. Perhaps there's someone that has hurt you so badly that it just, the word forgiveness just turns your stomach. You can't imagine it, and yet the anger keeps you up at night. Or perhaps there's an issue of systemic justice, poverty in our city, or wars around the world that feel like this giant Goliath, and you wonder, Lord, what can be done? So in this story, I want to suggest that we see a call for action to ourselves. We see an opportunity to trust in Jesus. We see an opportunity to not be stuck on the sidelines. Because you see, there's a final group of characters that this story highlights. It's the army, the Israelites themselves, when they could do nothing, when David stood up and battled for them as the man of the in-between. It says it like this. When the men of Israel and Judah rose with a shout after David had slain the giant, they pursued the Philistines as far as Gath and the gates of Ekron. And the people of Israel came back from chasing the Philistines and they plundered their camp. So even after the champion had beat the giant, there was work for the army to do. So Jesus, our champion, has done the work to slay Satan, to slay evil. And there's work for us to do. There's a pursuit for us to follow Jesus into battle. There's a pursuit for us to go into the enemy camp and to win back things that have been taken from us, stolen from us, that have stripped our lives away, and value can be added back as we trust Christ for his proactive, his restorative work. So in this story, I see that no matter how we feel, no matter how flawed we feel, like David, there's a role for us. And no matter how big the giant, there's a champion who's even bigger, who's gone out and fought and won the battle so that we can join a battle and we can win along with Jesus. We're on the winning team, folks. Can I pray for us as we end? Heavenly Father, I thank you. I thank you for what we've seen in this ancient story. This story of battle, and it's all its unpleasant details. We see a story that you have won. We see a story that because you have won, we can join you in the battle. We can take back ground and not be a defeated people on the sidelines. We can join you and rise up in victory and live this life you have for us. I pray that for our friends here today. And I pray this in Jesus' strong name. Amen.